Martin Wainwright, hello.
Hello. Hi, Adam.
Nice to speak to you. So you literally wrote the book on April Fool's Day. It's the Guardian Book of April Fool's Day, still available at all good retailers, I'm sure. And I guess the most famous is the Panorama Spaghetti Harvest, isn't it? Would you talk us through that?
Yes. I mean, that does top pretty much every list that's ever been compiled, not just in Britain, but in America and kind of all over the world. And it was just brilliantly timed, this one. It was a television documentary. It was Panorama, that was a serious, you know, it was a very serious BBC program in those days, as it still is. And it had Richard Dimbleby as the anchorman, who was the sort of voice of the BBC in those days. And people greatly respected anything he said, so they were lulled into thinking, or it would never have occurred to them that Richard Dimbleby would have presided over an April Fool. And it showed film of these girls in Italy picking spaghetti off trees, harvesting spaghetti. It was all the idea of a cameraman, actually. It wasn't Dimbleby's idea. They often come from quite modest people, April Fools, and it was a cameraman called Charles de Jaeger, who was brought up in Vienna. And when he was a schoolboy, he always remembered one of his teachers said to anybody who was stupid, instead of saying, you know, you fool or you clot or whatever, he said, boy, you are so stupid, you'd believe me if I told you that spaghetti grew on trees. And de Jaeger just kept this at the back of his mind. And eventually, in 1958, he tried several times, but in 1958, he persuaded the BBC to do it. And it was absolutely amazing. It was partly, it's maybe hard to believe now, you know, we have all these pasta restaurants, but I mean, I was a boy, I was 8 years old then, and spaghetti, for everybody, spaghetti came out of a tin, so you didn't really know where it came from.
Yeah.
And so we watched it. I mean, I do remember just kind of people saying, come over, come and see this, this is how spaghetti is made. And even the director general of the BBC, who was an ex-army general, called Sir Ian Jacob, he was watching it with his wife, because there was a bit of a hoo-ha afterwards. Most people thought it was wonderful, but there were more straight-laced people who wrote in and said, you know, the BBC should not be doing this kind of, you know, telling porky pies. And so when he called the head of the producer of Panorama, the chap called Hugh Mile, he was very worried. But actually Jacobs said to him that he'd been taken in, Sir Ian Jacobs himself, but Lady Jacobs, who did the cooking, came in and said, oh, come on, you know, this can't be true. And so Sir Ian and Lady Jacobs, they decided to resolve the issue by looking spaghetti up in the Encyclopedia Britannica or looking up pasta. And he said, do you know, Mile, the Encyclopedia Britannica doesn't even mention spaghetti. So, you know, even at the top it worked. And it was, you can still see it, a clip of it on the internet. And, you know, it's slightly old-fashioned by to modern standards. It's black and white and so on. But it was very well done. They went out there and they got spaghetti and they hung it on trees and they filmed it.
Fantastic. And what about The Guardian? We've had we've notched up some famous ones, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. I mean, we usually do one. I mean, no doubt there'll be one in today. I've not yet found it, but by much the most famous was when The Guardian did an entire supplement on a non-existent island called San Serif. Yeah, again, this was the idea of a humble chap, an advertising rep called Philip Davis, not a journalist. He used to collect some advertising for these special supplements, which we do now, you know, on all sorts of subjects, and they're basically sort of vehicles for advertising. And they'd done quite a few on real countries, he said, "Oh, why don't we invent somewhere?" And they invented this island called San Serif, which is the name of a type of type, you know, that doesn't have sort of curly bits on the capital letters. And the journalists on The Guardian came up with all, you know, a whole history of this island, and all the places and all the people were named after typefaces. And when you look at it now, you think, well, how could anybody have been taken in by this? But they were, because one of my colleagues who foreign overseas reporting went to the Foreign Office's base at Chevening House, where they hold conferences. And he was in the library there, and they had everything filed under countries. And he was looking up somewhere like Sweden, and he just noticed that, you know, two countries along, there was a very small little file called San Serif. So either they had a good sense of humour, or they'd fallen for it too.
Nice. And we were talking earlier, and you mentioned Google, a wind-up there, an extraterrestrial wind-up
yeah.
that's quite famous.
Well, you know, top tip for everybody today, Google will do an April Fool today, so look out for it, because they don't tell you what they are, which is part of the secret, obviously, of April Fools, although some advertising companies do promote them, but Google don't. But somewhere on or around Google, there'll be an April Fool. And I think the best one was when they just brought in Google Earth so that you could look down on the Earth. And there's this place, Area 51 in Nevada, where the United States tests its secret weaponry. And lots of sort of geeky people were terribly pleased that they could now look at Area 51. They couldn't see much because all the secret things were in hangars. And what Google did on April the 1st was they put these two little tiny little aliens, very realistic, well, realistic enough. They were blue, a bit like the Avatar people. And they each had a little flying saucer. And one of them was washing the windscreen. And the other one was plugging in a barbecue. And they were just there. And somebody found them. You know, somebody who was looking carefully at Area 51, hoping to spot some secret weapon. And immediately, you know, within minutes, it kind of went viral. And you can still find it on the internet. It's not on Google Earth anymore. But some people have done sort of snapshots of it and put it up on the internet. And it's very sweet and very clever and has, you know, it's kind of like a really good April Fool because they made so little fuss about it. Sans Serif was a little bit self-satisfied, but I think the Google one was just lovely because we don't know which Google person did it. And at the end, after 12 o'clock, I think they had to wait until 12 o'clock had gone right round the world, if you see what I mean.
Yes, yeah.
But then they took it off.
And why do you think the idea of an April Fool is so enduring? Do you think it, do you think it will last?
Yes, I'm sure it'll last because it goes back, Adam, you know, it really goes back a long way. The earliest references are sort of 500 BC in India, which is where the term a fool's errand derives from, when people were sent out with them, you know, on ridiculous errands to people who weren't expecting them, you know, a bit like delivering a whole load of pizza to someone, you know, who hasn't ordered it. I mean, it's a slightly simple type of jape, but it's a very, very old one. And the Greeks and the Romans took it on, and it's just about every culture has done it. And the reason it's April the 1st is that all around the world, pretty much, that was when the year began, including in the UK. It was changed in sort of... I think it was 16-something, we finally changed it to January. But traditionally, April is the new year because that's when the spring comes and, you know, as we are seeing now, trees start blossoming and going into leaf. And it was a celebration, really, and it had an element of the topsy-turvy thing, you know, the misrule. People were allowed to misbehave for half a day before the authorities clamped down on them again, so it was a bit of a kind of safety valve. And I'm sure it kind of comes and goes, and it's quite good at the moment. It's not so much in the news at the moment, which means it's easier to do an April Fool if everybody's very aware of them, as they were the year after the spaghetti harvest. That was in 1958. So in 1959, you know, it would be a difficult year to do an April Fool because everyone would be saying, oh, do you remember the spaghetti harvest? What will they come up with this time? But I think this year, you know, I've not seen a huge amount about April Fool's Day, so we'll probably all get had.
And just finally, given that we are expecting, obviously, some newspaper tricks and, of course, PR companies deliberately putting out false stories,
yes.
Have you got any tips to spot one?
Yeah, well, one tip. I mean, I've already had a couple of April Fool emails written, you know, straight-faced about inviting me to press conferences, which I had a good look at and thought, no, wait a minute, I think I know what this is. And Adam, I've also had several emails today with saying in bold, this is not an April Fool.
Works both ways.
Well, yes, because there's probably not time to tell you about, but there's a section in the book about things that sounded like April Fools but weren't, and one of them was... Chicken heated nuclear bombs, which very briefly was during the height of the Cold War, the Allies discussed burying nuclear nuclear bombs on the border between West and East Germany, so that if the Soviets invaded, they'd be able to let off these things. And they discovered that buried in the ground in northern Germany in the winter, the mechanisms that would have triggered the nuclear bombs wouldn't have been reliable because of the cold. Mm. And they came up with this thing about keeping chickens in these little sort of mini bunkers, and the warmth of the chickens and also their produce, as it were, you know, their poo, would have been sufficient to raise the temperature enough for the triggering mechanism to have worked. And everybody said, you know, this is an April Fool, but actually it wasn't. It was true. But just on tips, look at the names, and if there's, I mean, I don't want to spoil any April Fools, but be very suspicious of anybody called Olaf or Lars, Scandinavian name, L-A-R-S, the sort of naughty Scandinavian twins, because both Lars and Olaf are very good if you're trying to do an anagram of the word April Fool and turn it into a name. So I think that's a tip. I mustn't give too many tips because, as I say, I don't want to spoil the fun. But oh, and look out, keep an eye on BMW advertising. There's a whole range of advertisers who do April Fools, and BMW are the sort of English Google. They'll almost certainly have a ingenious advert in today for something and treat it with them. Caution.
Okay, we will do. Well, thank you very much, Martin Wainwright.
Thanks, Adam.